Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a true realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes, and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. A true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. The first clause in this declaration is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy. And so there are about 28 lodges positioned throughout the world, each operate autonomously of the others, but they all are busy spread broadcasting the philosophy of Theosophy. Now here in Philadelphia, we have a program consisting of two weekly meetings, on Sunday mornings from 11 until 12 noon, and on Wednesday evenings from 7:45 until 9 o'clock. On Wednesday evenings, there is a class being held in the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. And the class is now studying the subject of reincarnation. And this coming Wednesday, that idea will be discussed from the viewpoint of what is it that reincarnates. Also on Wednesdays, beginning at 5:30 and lasting until 7:30, the reference library is open for research and study. In this library, you will find books, pamphlets, and magazines comprising the original writings of the founders of the Theosophical movement. Also, on Wednesday evenings, you will find a reference in reference to the evening's class in the library, as well as on the table behind the usher. All these books, pamphlets, and magazines are on display at the table just outside of the library. And these may be purchased either during library hours or before or after the regular meetings. Now, all activities of this lodge are free, and the lodge is sustained by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. Now, on Sunday mornings from 11 to 12, there is always a talk, forum, or panel based on a monthly theme, which is
path of spiritual knowledge.
The path of spiritual knowledge. Can't read my own writing. And today there will be a talk on the subject of the three streams of evolution. And next Sunday morning there will be a panel on the pivotal point of spiritual evolution. After all of the Sunday morning presentations, there's always a time for questions, answers, comments. Now, all of the activities of this lodge, in keeping with the policy of ULT, continues to be sustained by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. All of these are always necessary, and all are most welcome to participate. The reading for today has been selected from The Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, page 181. It now becomes plain that there exists in nature a triple evolutionary scheme for the formation of the three periodical upadis, or rather three separate schemes of evolution, which in our system are inextricably interwoven and interblended at every point. These are the monadic and the spiritual, the intellectual, the physical evolutions. These three are the finite aspects of the reflections of the field of cosmic illusion, of Atma, the seventh, the one reality. One. The monadic is, as the name implies, concerned with the growth and development into still higher phases of activity of the monad in conjunction with, two, the intellectual represented by the manas dhyanis, the solar devas, or the agniswata pitris, the givers of intelligence and consciousness, and man, two man. And three, physical representative by the chakras of the lunar pitris, round which nature has concreted the present physical body. This body serves as the vehicle for the growth, to use a misleading word, and the transformations through manas and owing to the accumulation of experiences of the finite into the infinite, of the transient into the eternal and absolute. Each of these three systems has its own laws and is ruled and guided by different sets of highest dhyanis or lagoi. Each is represented in the constitution of man, the microcosm of the great macrocosm, and it is the union of these three streams in him which makes him the complex being he now is. The subject of the talk for this morning is Three Streams of Evolution.
From the sampling of the portion of the secret doctrine we just heard read, it seems that there is nothing plain about the stupendous evolutionary scheme given in that volume relating to the gradual evolution of the cosmos, the solar system, the planet on which we are living, and humanity. And yet our reading starts out that it is plain that there is a triple evolutionary scheme, which we are calling this morning the three streams of evolution. Our umbrella topic for the month is the path of spiritual growth. And if we are going to take this path individually and collectively, it is important that we have a grasp of these three streams of evolution, not only as it applies to nature around us, but also as it's reflected in our own nature. So how is it plain to us? Well, we say it's a stream or three streams. And we understand a stream to be a body of water or a current, a moving current that comes from a larger source such as the ocean. And if we think of that ocean, we understand it to be not just water, the universal solvent, but within that water are to be found and dissolved all the various minerals that we can find on the planet. And so we have represented within that ocean the material basis of life and water. We also have in that ocean all the different degrees of plant and animal life that we can find in the ocean. And not only that, at every particular point of the ocean, we find those three different degrees, the water, the dissolved minerals, and some degree of substance, and the various, some degree of life. And as we see the streams coming forth from that large ocean, even there we find that those streams are also threefold. But taking that analogy within ourselves, we know that when anything comes forth, it comes forth in a threefold way. We might say that everything we evolve or create or manufacture or build as human beings begins in spirit, with a desire and intention to create something. And maybe there is the faintest glimmer of an idea of what it is we want to build. It's not something we can yet touch or hold or examine in any definite way, but it is definitely there. And as this idea begins to grow and expand, we develop a definite plan about what it will be. If it's a chair, it's no longer the vague idea of a chair, but it's definite dimensions and style and color. And we have a definite plan of that chair forming in our mind. And then we know we have to gather together the different materials of that chair in order to build it. And so the evolution of that chair came forth in a threefold way. It came through intent or will, you might call the spirit. It came through idea, intelligence, and through the building up of form, the manifestation on this plane of that guiding spirit and intelligence. So in this way, these ideas are plain to us, but when it comes to understanding the greater scope, that is admittedly more difficult, but we can begin with this process of correspondence and analogy to begin to see the connections. So we said there are three streams. And basically, as stated in our reading, they are called the monadic, the intellectual, and the physical. And if we go back to our idea of the source or the ocean, we might say that all these three streams, the monadic, the intellectual, and the physical, come from one source, just as all the three streams come from the ocean. Whether we call it the one life, or deity, or the absolute, it is the one eternal, enduring reality, whichever is, was, and always will be. It cannot be limited. There is no beginning or ending to it. And perhaps the only thing we can conceive of in our mind that is anything like it is absolute abstract space. Space that is everywhere, in everything, that contains all things and is not affected by anything that may come and go within it. And we might say everything that we create or we observe to be manifested around manifests and comes into being in that space. And so these three streams of evolution flow from or manifest from that one source or absolute. And so we'll look at them in a threefold way, but remembering whenever we speak of one, they cannot appear without the other. For wherever there is the manifestation of spirit, there is also in some degree or another the manifestation of some degree of substance or form and some degree of intelligence. It's just a matter of to what degree it is manifesting. So the spiritual stream, or the monadic, is that part of nature and ourselves which is a mirror of the absolute. Now, a drop, you might say, is a mirror of the ocean. In the sense, it contains in a small way all the elements and potentialities of the ocean from which it came. A ray of light, in that sense, is a mirror of its source, the sun. In a sense, it contains in itself the attributes of its source, the light from which it's come. And so there is that part in our nature, which is a mirror, like unto that absolute. It has no beginning, it has no ending. It is, was, and always will be. We might say it's our higher self. It is the divine or deific essence in us. In Sanskrit, it is called Atma, but in English, we speak of it as spirit. In that sense of the one source of life, that aspect in all of life, which is one with and inseparable from that divine source. Now, in addition to that spirit part of us, we said that there is no point of spirit or no point of manifestation where there can be spirit without some degree of substance or intelligence. And so we cannot think of our spiritual nature without some kind of vehicle or degree of substance through which it can express itself. And that manifestation or expression in various degrees of the spiritual potency in all of us is what we'll call soul, the vehicle of that spiritual oneness. And so there can be various degrees of expression or soul awareness of that one degree of intelligence, of awareness or light. And so in the Sanskrit, it's called buddhi or spiritual soul in English. And from our point of view, spiritual soul is our accumulated wisdom, our accumulated spiritual knowledge, and our highest degree of discernment of the oneness of life and our interconnectedness with all of life. So there is the fact of our unity represented by spirit, but there is also the awareness of it represented by buddhi, our intelligence. And so those two aspects, Atma, buddhi, or spiritual soul, are what we might call make up the spiritual stream of evolution. And that aspect of spirit and soul is not just in the human being, but is in all departments of nature, all different degrees of intelligent life that we see manifested. Theosophy teaches that in all the different kingdoms of nature, there is to be found that one principle of spirit, as well as a gradual unfolding of that awareness within each of those kingdoms. There is no degree of life that does not have some degree of intelligence and consciousness manifesting in it, whether we're speaking of the human, the animal, the vegetable, or even the mineral kingdom. So this gradual unfoldment of awareness in all the different kingdoms, of all the possibilities that lie within infinite spirit, is what we call the spiritual stream of evolution. Now, what about the mental or the intellectual stream of evolution? Well, once again, it proceeds from the idea that intelligence is to be found everywhere in nature, ideation in some degree or another. We see selective intelligence even in the mineral kingdom, in the formation of crystals and the way in which different chemicals will selectively reject and attract themselves to other. Now, science, observing this from the outer point of view, sees this as the interaction of so-called forces of nature and catalogs them. Well, that would be like observing two individuals shaking hands and determining that the reasons they are shaking hands has to do with purely physical forces of attraction and interaction between their bodies. We know that when individuals shake hands, there's much more going on than the interaction on the physical plane, that there's a whole inner life of intelligence and compassion and feeling and motive that goes into that action. And so too, in nature, we see around us on the mineral plane even, there is intelligence. There is, in some degree, guiding the forces, the attraction and repulsion we see in nature. We see it in the plant kingdom, where there is a growing sensitivity to the environment and sensitivity to sources of water and sources of sun and sources of nourishment at different times of year. And even our scientists now recognize that in the plant kingdom there is a sensitivity to the shock and suffering that other sources of plant life may experience. If we go to the animal kingdom, we know the instinctive intelligence of individual animals and colonies of animals, such as the bee and the ant, is remarkable in their architecture, in their colonies, in their intelligent gathering of food sources and protection. Once again, from observing it from the outer point of view, it looks like behavioral patterns. But looking at it from another point of view, we see it the expression of an inner intelligence. So it's learning to look at life around us in the same way we understand our own lives. We just don't see ourselves as we observe ourselves in the mirror as an image. We understand ourselves to be a soul, an inner being, working through a physical form. So the growing intelligence in this growing intellectual stream reaches a certain critical point in the evolutionary scheme when there is a lighting up of what we call mind or manas. And there we have the incarnation of a thinker, a being capable of self-conscious, directed will and thought. And to have free will does not necessarily mean that we can control everything that happens to us in our lives. But it does mean that having free will, we have the ability to determine what our attitude will be to what happens to us in our life, to choose how we will respond to different circumstances, to not act instinctively out of anger or jealousy or rage, but to begin to change the way we react to things. That ability of free will and choice is exclusive to the human kingdom and is the result of a mind being, a spiritual being on its own degree of evolutionary progress. So in the human being, we have the intelligence of all the different kingdoms, as well as the intelligence of this mind being that is incarnated in many different personalities and bodies through a long series of reincarnations on this planet. And in each particular reincarnation, gathering the karmic consequences, the results of previous actions, and setting up causes for the future. So that is the mental stream, the growing power of intellect. We see an intelligence we see in all the kingdoms until we reach the point of individual self-conscious existence. And then this third stream is the physical, and that perhaps is the most obvious to us. It certainly is the particular field of investigation of the scientists who look at the evolution of the form side of life, from the simple to the complex, from the homogeneous to heterogeneous, and the development of the various departments, the kingdoms, and the various departments of nature, and the manifestation of the complex forms that we have. Theosophy has no contention with these ideas. However, when the scientist says that this evolution of form is purely guided by physical laws or operation of chance, or is purely in the realm of matter, that's where Theosophy would step in and say, yes, there is a certain degree of development of form by itself, but after a certain point, there has to be the direct intervention of intelligence, of guiding intelligence to a higher point or a higher degree. And in a sense, we see this in science today, because even our scientists are using their own intelligence to try to improve what occurs naturally around us. They are intervening with the processes of nature, in we might say in an artificial way, but it is the imposition of a higher degree of intelligence on the development of the lower. So Theosophy would say that the form side of life is the result of the guiding inspiration of the inner spiritual and intellectual stream. So this, in a very broad way, are the three streams of evolution. And the reason it's so important to our spiritual path of evolution, if we are going to develop spiritually, we need to remember that we cannot develop spiritually unless we at the same time develop physically and at the same time develop mentally. It is the three streams of evolution at every point. So what does it mean to develop spiritually? Well, in one sense, it means to bring our heart, our feeling nature, and our mind, our ideas, in tune with the understanding that there is one source of life, to begin to realize that in our minds and begin to act accordingly. And as we do that, there grows from that intellectual understanding of the oneness life an intuitive, an inner realization of it. And what we at one point heard to be true, we now know to be true through our own development. That is that evolution of spiritual progress. It is self-realization of the oneness of life. The intellectual part of that evolution is developing our minds as a tool so that we can raise our thoughts and feelings to that level. And we can do that by study. We can do that by developing all the faculties of our mind that are necessary in the pursuit of that study, the development of our imagination, our memory, our keeping our aspirations to study in the right direction. It can be developed by meditation, by concentration, by disciplining our minds to be open-minded, to not just reject things automatically because they seem unfamiliar to us, but allowing ourselves to be tolerant and open-minded to things until we've investigated, to be discriminative in our understanding of things. All these things have to do with the evolution of mind or mental capacities, raising them to a point where they can be a suitable vehicle to our higher spiritual understanding. And then the third way in which we develop, of course, is the physical. And sometimes we think that spiritual growth or the path of spiritual knowledge means that we ignore the physical. And it's true in our culture, much too much attention is being placed on the physical body itself. But as stated in this reading, it is in the physical form, in this body, that the mind being has the opportunity through the experiences provided through the organs of this, of sensation and action of the body, to transform all that experience of this plane in the body into something that's real and eternal and lasting, to take our everyday experiences and to transform them into spiritual knowledge that can be preserved in that buddhi, that soul part of our nature, and brought back from life to life. So the physical body as a tool is very important to keep in the best condition possible. Now we know that for many, they don't come into life, nor do they have in the life a perfectly healthy body or a perfectly fit body. But nevertheless, with what we have, through moderation, through careful selection, we can do what we need to do to keep the body fit and a strong vehicle for the mind being to use. And there are a number of suggestions in the philosophy about how to do that. But the whole point is, if we want to be a well-rounded, developed individual spiritually, we cannot neglect any constituent part of our being. We have to give attention to the physical duties of life. That means care of the body, as well as the development of our intellect, our reasoning, and also develop the higher spiritual, the devotional, and the intuitive parts of our nature. Now, we know this is a vast subject, and we're sure you have many questions and comments, so we open it up to your consideration. Yes?
The question that comes up is, why are these three streams of evolution? What's the bigger picture? Why are we here? What is all this about then?
What is all this about? Why these three streams of evolution? When we ask ourselves, well, what is the purpose of having these three streams of evolution? Well, if we recall that one of those streams is the intelligent or the intellectual, which is present in all the different degrees of life, we might say that one of the purposes is for the further development, the further spiritual development of the mind being, the thinker, a greater realization of all the divine potentialities within ourself. So we said there's a certain point in the human kingdom when we reach individual self-conscious awareness. I am I. That realization. But when we usually think of it, I am I, we view ourselves as separate eyes or separate identities from other or from all of life. So the next or higher phase of our spiritual evolution is to take that I am I individual awareness and learn to identify that I with not our personalities, but with the one source of all life, to feel and to know in every part of our being that we are one with the all, that we are one with every other degree. That's one aspect. The other aspect is for that mind being, by contacting, coming in contact with all the different degrees of intelligence represented in its nature, from the mineral, the vegetable, the animal kingdom, the intelligence in that, in those lives, to raise up their intelligence to the point where they at some point too can pursue that higher spiritual path. Yes, in the back.
We were thinking we, in our own nature, reflect those three streams. We get a flash. We don't know where the idea came from. It's not material, and we didn't hear it or think it. It just is. And then we apply our mind to it. We get an awareness of it. And then we turn it into a manifestation.
Yes.
That's the spiritual, the intellectual, and the physical. And we do it all day long and never think about it.
Mm-hmm. And as we do that all day long, are we not creating our lives? Now, the thing is, we get a flash, but sometimes, and we get an idea, and we transform it, but sometimes the flash or the idea we get and what we transform it to is very personal and separative, maybe destructive, maybe hurtful. And so the outcome is one of suffering, but it is still within the power of our being to create that. And it is through changing the manifestation of those same powers that we can make things better for ourselves and others. Yes?
to say I am that I am, or I am and I am, as even Shakespeare tried to relay in an English language that he created, to be or not to be, mm-hmm. I guess you could say. I guess that would be the string to unite, to not say I am and I am, but just to say I am, as well as that source. And that source, you know, from the noetic aspect, which would be like a spiritual or bodhi or buddhi, as you say, to get to that one source of Atman, reaching as well as the streams, I have to also ask you, in your metaphor of this and physically, the source being Atman, being the mountain or the lake, because of course the streams flow into the ocean, so it's almost the same, though, as you were saying, in a sense, because of course the frosted mountains and the lakes that they pour into to create the streams come from the humidity from the ocean.
So yes.
Really, it's all the same source,
yes.
Whether you say the streams pour in the ocean or the mountains pour into the streams.
Well, it's a wonderful metaphor there. We had started by saying that, presenting the idea of the streams coming from the ocean, but streams also have another source. They come from the mountains, and either the result of the melting of snow and ice, or lakes of water, which are up there, or internal streams, pressure streams caused by volcanic ashes and pressures within the earth, which drive it up, or sometime it's rain. But in either case, it ultimately all comes from evaporated water from the ocean. So at the same, wherever the stream is, it's flowing down away from the ocean at one point and back towards the ocean. Well, this is basically a representation on the physical plane of the larger evolutionary stream of life.
As above is below.
So we see that at one point in the period of evolution, there is a unfolding in spiritually, mentally, physically, mentally, and spiritually from the homogeneous and one, or the ocean, into the differentiated and many, the different streams. And then the cycle, we might say, changes at the next phase of the evolution, and it all returns back to its one source again.
Like gas, liquid, and solid.
Gas, liquid, and solid. So we say that the various differentiated streams of intelligence, of form, of spirit, now return back to the one source they have all come from with the experience gained, but that's just one cycle. What happens at the next coming forth is there's another outpouring, not for the first time as a blank slate, but as the result of all the previous periods of evolution. So when we wake up in the morning, we say it's a new day. Well, yes, it's a new day, but it's a new day in which we bring with us a long history of the past that we can bring into that new day to make it a little bit different than the previous ones. Yes?
So sometimes in the readings, we see that they talk about the psychic stream of evolution. So where on these three that are mentioned today, where would that psychic evolution lay? Mm-hmm.
Well, the question relates to the psychic stream or the psychic department of nature. The word psychic is a variation on psuche or soul. And so it relates to the soul aspect of nature. So we'll say there's three departments of nature. There's the physical, which is obvious to us, the form side of life. There is the spiritual, that which is the impelling energetic source, the basis, the spiritual energetic willing basis of all form. And then there is the soul, the feeling, intellectual, intelligent guiding aspect of nature. So we see that in the human being. We know that we will, we know that we feel and think, and we know that we act physically. So the whole degree of the feeling, the intentional, the thought part of our nature is the psychic. And so too there is in nature around us a whole complicated different degree of intelligence, of sentient being in every different kingdom. And in all the different religions and philosophies, they had different names for these different degrees of intelligence. But it is all representative of the idea that nature is alive and intelligent and responsive and sentient in every point. There is no point in which we can say there is dead, inert matter. It is all alive in its own degree. We see a transformation, an evolution, an evolving of that expression, but it is not a creation out of nothing. And so the psychic stream of evolution for a human being has to do with the refinement, the purification, the lifting up of our thought and feeling, of our desires, to the point where they are in harmony with our mental and spiritual development. And of course, that cannot be done unless we at the same time learn to discipline the physical senses. Because for us as human beings, the input of our physical senses has a lot to do with the way we feel and think and how we respond. So our psychic development or stream goes hand in hand with our learning to control the sensations. Yes, sir.
At this point in my physical evolution, I'm wrestling with how, you know, just by being in this world of form, I think we create a certain amount of destruction, you know, just through, you know, walking you or killing microorganisms. That's a hard one for me to kind of balance in harmony with, you know, the spirit and the soul. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Okay. So a very good question. In the process of our evolution, it is clear that the human form cannot exist without in some way destroying other forms of life, whether intentionally or unintentionally, and it doesn't have to be with any malicious motive, but just in order to survive or to get from one place to another, we seem to crush out other degrees of form. So this may be an intention, a difficulty for one who is heart-bent on not harming life. And so we begin with the advice of Krishna, and that is that the self cannot be destroyed. The spiritual part cannot be killed. It does not suffer. The spiritual aspect of any degree of life cannot be harmed. What can be destroyed is the form side of life. Not only can it be destroyed, it is inevitable that the form side of life be destroyed. It is either destroyed in the course of its natural process of disintegration, or it is destroyed in its interaction with other beings. But without that disruption of form into its constituent degrees of substance, there could be no more recreation, no more generation of new forms. So the destruction of the form side of life, which is illusionary, all forms eventually dissolve into their substituent degrees and come forth again, is inevitable. So the issue then comes, what harm do we do to the intelligent or the psychic aspect? We cannot harm the spiritual. We cannot help but destroy the physical form, but that's part of it. If we did not break down ourselves and if we did not break down the substituents of nature around us, there could not be any further transformation. Nature recycles everything. So the key issue for us is on the intellectual or the psychic plane, and this is where it's key. Nature responds to the thought and feeling of humanity. It is lifted up or it is degraded by our thought and feeling, because all the different degrees of nature are intelligent and sentient in their own way. The karma we experience from nature, whether it is harmful to us or assisting us, it is in proportion to the feeling and thought we've impressed it with it. If we suffer from nature, it is because of the thought and feeling impressions we've given out. So we might say that there is one law of laws by which evolution proceeds, and it is the law of sacrifice. Now when we think of sacrifice, we think of a ritual. But sacrifice from the point of evolution is where the lower forms give of themselves to become part of the higher, and the higher give of themselves to lift up and become part of the lower. They sacrifice some of their own stature to come down to the level to lift up the lower, and the lower give up themselves to become part of the higher. So we see in nature around us, the very simple lives become the food, the nourishment for the higher forms of life, in their form side. And we see in the human kingdom how the parents give up their, whatever they want to do, in developing their lives very often give up careers or ambitions or desires so that they can spend certain time and sacrifice so that their children can have opportunities to grow. And we see the same examples with teachers and instructors of all different degrees, where someone with more intelligence, more development, has to step back from their own degree and meet the lower and bring it up, and the lower has to come up to the higher. Well, that sacrifice is indispensable. And if we do anything in life with that feeling of devotion and sacrifice, nature responds in kind and feels it. So all we can say is if we consume food, it should be with the idea of the sacrifice that nature is making to us, and in turn, how we are going to invest that food, that substance, that life, with the highest degree of feeling and thought that we have, so that when it leaves us, it carries with it that high impression. And so too we can do in any degree of life, because we may, in our everyday activity, we may indirectly affect other degrees of life around us, and all we can keep in our hearts is that whatever we do, in thinking, speaking, walking, we are doing it with the highest degree of motive. Yes?
Well, it seems that this lecture ties in with what reincarnates. Mm. And you mentioned ocean and stream. And what came to mind is the cycle of rain. Rain descends, nourishes the earth, evaporates, returns to its source as vapor, and then comes forth again. So it seems a continuous, unending cycle from that ocean of life, which replenishes itself over and over again. And we, as human beings, all life participate and are nourished by it. Mm-hmm.
So we want to keep in mind in this thought of the three streams of evolution and the path of spiritual growth, the idea of reincarnation. There have been some questions and comments related to our spiritual growth in this life, but our spiritual, mental, physical evolution extends over many lives as individuals and humanity. So there will be a continual evolution of form, of awakening of mind, of higher degrees of spiritual expression on this planet. But even when this planet and its evolutionary development ends, there is no beginning or ending for the mind being. The spiritual being, on some degree of substance in some world, in some form or another, it will continue to evolve and learn, because in its own nature, it is one with its monadic essence. It is one with deity. In its own nature, it is eternal and divine. It can have no beginning or inner ending. It is always alive, conscious, intelligent, on some degree of substance. So there is that eternal evolution of the pilgrim soul, even though in any one particular period of evolution, its accomplishments, spiritual, mental, psychic, and physical, can reach a certain period of perfection relative to that time, relative to this earth. And then at another time, there'll be the opportunity to reach an even higher degree of expression.
So like you said, I'm sorry. So like you said earlier, it's not a dichotomy of the three streams. Quite the contrary, it's a convergence of the three streams, constantly intertwining. So it's never the question people always try to, the dualism, the paradox people try to project. It's this or that, you know. And it's really it's all right. Yes. So yes. You're saying that one can't exist without the other.
Yes. The observation is it's not. A dichotomy of spiritual or physical life, but it's rather it's a convergence. And of course, this goes back to the first fundamental principle that there is only one reality, eternal. There is only space, that one eternal reality. Everything has come forth and manifested within it, but it is constant. It is the one eternal reality. When everything goes, it still is. So there is a unifying oneness of all of life. So all our evolution, all our streams of evolution take place, intermingle within that oneness. Now, in any one life, we may have the opportunity to develop one more than the other according to our karma, but we do the best over we can to give attention to all those different degrees. Yes?
We think something closer is when we're at sleep at night and go into sessions of dreams. There is a continuous of consciousness with or without this physical form being active.
Yes. The idea presented that in the process of sleep of the body, the physical form is inactive. And yet we continue to be alive and conscious, intelligent, on another state or plane of consciousness. And for most of us, that's the dreaming state. And we know that we have all different kinds of dreams. Some seem very real to us and vivid, and are as real and vivid as, maybe even more so than our objective experiences in waking, and can impress us more. And of course, others we know are quite fanciful and make no sense at all. But the great point there is that in spite of the fact that we're not currently seeing with our physical eyes or walking around or talking or smelling, we nevertheless can have the power to taste, move, think, react on inner planes, other states of consciousness. So this should give us a clue to the idea that our evolution, our continuing expansion of that power, goes beyond what can manifest on this just this earthly plane. It's very important here, but there are many other lessons, many other opportunities for us to learn. And many of us do learn in dreams, many inventions in all the different fields have come through the experiences of dreams. Yes?
The word reincarnation was used a few moments ago. Do these three streams of evolution reincarnate with us,
Do the three streams of evolution reincarnate? Well, re-embodiment is a natural process of life. As we pointed out before, there could be no physical evolution without the constant re-embodiment of the substance in various forms. So forms have their period of creation, preservation and development, and destruction and regeneration. That's a re-embodiment, a recycling. There is no waste in that sense in nature. So there's re-embodiment. But then the second and third streams, that of mental and spiritual evolution for the thinker, take place through the process of reincarnation. Yes, there's much we can do in this one life to evolve spiritually and mentally, but all the possibilities, the infinite possibilities that lie within spirit cannot be completely understood and developed in any one life. And the main reason is the physical opportunities, the physical conditions of our life do not allow us to do that. When we are incarnated, we are confined in a certain degree to the conditions around us. And so it is through the karmic opportunities of many lives that the reincarnating ego has the long-term goal and opportunity to take all that individual temporary experience and transmute it into something permanent that it can take with it through many lives. So at this point, we'll remind you that We are going to continue on Wednesday evening with the general subject of reincarnation and our study in the ocean of theosophy with the examination of the idea of what is it or who is it that reincarnates. Our meeting is adjourned.